entranced as the shimmer of blue crystals hung suspended in the air just for a second before melting away. Angelique frowned at the end of her cane. The walls of the hotel answered with a shuddering sigh. Angelique snapped shut the top of her cane. "Show me!" They fell into step. The sun was rising rapidly, spreading a welcome warm and pink glow behind the dark outlines of trees, making it look like the forest beyond the garden was in flames. Angelique used the cane to help her walk over the uneven ground. "Are you taking some sort of readings with that cane? Are you doing magic?" Seth asked timidly. Seth hadn't yet worked out if she actually needed it, or that was just an excuse for carrying it.
"If you must know, I've got bitten on the ankle," snapped Angelique.
Seth felt himself colour, and realised he must have been staring at her leg, wondering if it was a monster that bit her, or simply someone she'd been snarky to last week. "Sorry to hear that. So, is your red cane one of those magical inventions?"
"It's a divinoscope. It's very sensitive."
"Can I look at it?" he asked eagerly. She pulled it back sharply. "I said it's very sensitive." He felt stung by her snappy attitude, but showed her the way back past the greenhouse, hardly able to believe they were simply walking in this garden, like he had done every day of his life. And they were talking about magic, as if it was the most natural thing in the world.
"So what is a divinoscope exactly?"
"It can follow ripples of even very stale magic." Seth wanted to know why on earth anyone should want to follow ripples of very stale magic, but instead said,
"What is being magic like? Were you born magic?"
"Magic is
complicated."
Angelique gave a shrug of her slim shoulders.
"It's a bit like, cooking, Seth."
She said it with a bright smile, like she was talking to an idiot. "Some follow a recipe exactly, and it still doesn't work out. Some folk believe it's because you need to be born with a spark of something, some natural ability. And what your magical ability might be varies. But even simple magic can take months of study and practice to perfect. Magic is mostly hard work." Hard work. Seth found it difficult to believe magic was anything other than tremendously exciting.
"So this prospect, oh, do you mind me asking you all these questions?"
He was rewarded with a huge and weary sigh from Angelique. She delved into the shiny red handbag she carried everywhere. She pushed something in the flat of her palm right under Seth's nose.
"This might help you."
"What is it?"
"This is what you get if you do okay at the prospect. If you prove you have a spark of genuine magic and get accepted into the Elysee. Just for now, you can borrow mine."
Seth peered forward, his heart thundering madly to see what she had taken out of her bag, expecting to see something marvellous, something magical. It looked like a red credit card, smooth, flat, shiny and rectangular.
What exactly is it?"
"This is the doorway to magic." Chapter 24. A Towering Skyscraper of Books. Seth could only stare as she held the small shiny card in the flat of her hand. He felt distinctly unimpressed, but as Angelique held out the card, it started to grow. An image twisted and formed, and it was like looking into a room in miniature. "This is the most valuable thing to a sorcerer. However natural your magic, Seth, however good you think you are, no sorcerer should ever stop studying. Magic in the hands of someone who does no study and does not know what they are doing. Now that definitely is dangerous. This is a library card."
"Seriously?"
Seth wanted to laugh,
A library card? Everyone is putting themselves through the prospect for a library card?
Angelique let out a small psk of annoyance and tossed her hair.
Getting an Elysee library card is a tremendous honour. A ticket to the secret Elysee library of magical texts. How can you not be excited? There is nothing so brilliant and unexpected as the wonders you'll find in a book.
Seth looked back down at the card. It was growing again. He could make out a beautiful old room, vast, seemingly endless, with an arched ceiling, full of shafts of daylight that highlighted ancient maps and globes. But what you noticed most was the books. Shelves and shelves of them, towering upwards like a skyscraper of books. Seth pressed his nose against what Angelique was showing him, a moving picture. He could almost have stepped into the room. Even this early, he could see there were people wandering among the stacks, taking books off shelves, looking through them, and sitting down at long wooden tables to read, learning to be magic.
"It's a magical device," he said in awe, "like the sort of thing Dr. Tholomyès might have invented."
Dr. Tholomyès didn't invent this, but yes, it is magical. She used her fingers to walk along a narrow line between two towering stacks and moved her fingers across so Seth's vision focused in on a shelf, then on a book with a green spine. The Walls of Enlightenment, a brief history of the magical world up to the 42 deaths in the unpleasant. He couldn't resist moving his own finger closer, and watched in disbelief as the book removed itself from the shelf, turned so he could see the cover, and started to glide towards him, growing in size, getting closer and closer to his finger, and bigger, and... She slapped his finger away. The image vanished. She did something he didn't see. Then she put the card back in her handbag. But then she handed him something. It was the book. He took it in amazement, holding it, taking in the weight of the pages, the rough green of the cover, and the smell of paper that told it had just been removed from sitting snugly alongside friends. It was the very book he had been looking at. But hadn't that just been a picture held in Angelique's hands?
It feels just like a real book.
Yes, Seth. It is a real book. But it's also...
Oh, just go the back page.
Seth flicked through to the back cover, where he exposed a small piece of jagged rock, dark grey, nestled into the binding.
What's a lump of grey rock doing in a book?
Asked Seth, his fingers closing around it.
Because it's not a lump of grey rock. It's a book with a word stone in it. It's another magical invention. It makes it easier and quicker to read.
He lifted the stone. It didn't look the least bit magical. Immediately, he touched it. He started to glow like it had been switched on inside. He felt it turn smooth and flatten, and then the end reshaped itself before his eyes, becoming pointed, then sharp, as if you could use it as a weapon, or slice through vegetables in no time at all. It turned a lush, vivid emerald green that reminded Seth of ferns. He stood, marveling at the glowing green stone in his hand, but then a new sound made him look up, a stomping, as if a colossal elephant was thundering towards them. Something was coming through the trees in a hurry, coming straight for them. Seth looked up at the dark forest ahead, shielding his eyes from the low sunlight, and could see the nearby trees were starting to bend and their branches crack. Something huge was lumbering towards them, something terrible and dangerous. He looked at Angelique, tried to open his mouth to warn her. The woods were dark and contained many creatures he'd never even seen, but nothing so big, so noisy, and it was getting closer.
there came a roar, and a giant head on the end of a long neck poked sideways through the nearest clump of trees, twitching angrily, and a giant, malevolent orange eye locked directly on him. Seth went rigid with terror, unable to even move a muscle, let alone run, as the creature took a slow step forward, clearing the tops of the trees. It stood in the open, just a few feet away, opened its mouth, and a long, terrifying jet of fire burst the dry leaves into a line of flaming torches. Next, its head turned towards Seth. Chapter 25. One of those magical inventions.
Dragon?
Seth found his voice, and could only weakly croak. He tried to clutch at Angelique, but could not take his eyes off the red and gold scales of the monster, glinting in the early sunlight. It put its head down, pointing directly at Seth, opened its mouth to reveal two long glistening rows of pointed teeth. Out poured another blast of fire. He felt something tug at his hand, and the dragon disappeared. It had completely vanished. Seth blinked twice. Angelique stood in front of him, waving the word stone in front of his face.
"It's a brief history of the magic world, Seth. Why are you looking so terrified?"
"Dragon!"
he squeaked, lifting his arm to point behind her at the brace of trees where the monstrous creature had been standing only seconds before. She looked over and sighed.
"It's not a real dragon."
She tossed her hair dismissively.
"Obviously you have gone right back to the beginning.
It probably goes way back to ancient times when people could access the magic that dragons hold. Clearly you can't become magic that way anymore."
"Why not?"
"Because dragons were hunted to extinction hundreds of years ago." She rolled her eyes. "Even buried in these deep dark woods, you must know dragons no longer exist, Seth. Now, try to turn the volume down a bit. Maybe skip that chapter."
Angelique was giving one of her annoyed frowns, but Seth was finding it easier to put up with her impatience. He was getting used to it.
"You pick this up pretty quickly," she said, not able to keep the surprise out of her voice as she handed him back the stone. His fingers touched it reluctantly. She was giving him a curious look. "Most people only get words going into their head when they first use one."
"How do you turn it down?"
He turned it over.
"Don't look for a volume control. You just have to control it with your mind."
"Ooh, like a virtual reality thing."
"No, Seth, it is not a virtual reality thing. It's magic. Think of a question. Think of something you really want to answer to from that book. Try that."
Seth tentatively gripped the wordstone and try to do as she suggested, and think about what he wanted from it. Don't think about the dragon. But the only thing he could think of was the utter excitement that he was about to do magic. He tried to calm his thoughts. They had continued walking, and had reached the bush where apricots grew in profusion, and as Angelique got busy right away, lifting the cane and sending out a shower of sparks over the bush, Seth thought about the prospect and how his understanding of the magical world was slowly growing. He knew there was much he didn't yet know, but he also knew he had to understand it if he had any chance of figuring out who had committed the crime and clearing his own name. Dr. Thelomius's changes had led to the unpleasant. This might be the answer of what had led to one of the people here at the hotel wanting to murder him. Seth closed his fingers firmly around the stone and closed his eyes. He sensed something appearing next to his left elbow, and he turned. He opened his eyes and found himself looking at a small figure standing right there next to him. he recognized the small figure immediately. It was Dr. Thelomius. Chapter 26. More Important Than Being Popular. Seth dropped the stone in shock. The image instantly faded. Angelique, this time, didn't even turn from where she was examining the shrubbery.
Dragon back again?
No, no, it's Dr. Thelomius,
stammered Seth. He kind of guessed it wasn't real, but it was still difficult to see that image, that cherubic face, and not feel both sad and scared.
Ah, yes.
Guess he's bound to be in the book. Did you ask a question about him?
Seth nodded, and thought of that wonderful magical library and that towering skyscraper of books.
So, if Dr. Thelomius is in a book, can we talk to him? Ask him who murdered him?
Angelique let out another deep sigh. It's a magical device that makes reading really effortless, Seth. In that book, you get a concise history of the magical community, right up to the unpleasant. But you only get from it what's written in the book. She gave one of her impatient puffs.
Thought this was going to be easier than me telling you. Why don't you try again?
He bent to pick up the stone, holding it loosely in his fingers. This time, when he gripped it, he was ready, as Dr. Thelomius came into view. He told himself firmly it was just an image, it wasn't real. It was just a book becoming an image. He gripped the stone. The forest was fading, replaced by a small room with big windows where Dr. Thelomius went to take a seat at a desk. Seth was watching him from a corner of the room. The trees, the bushes, Angelique, everything had gradually faded until it had vanished, and Seth was left staring at Dr. Thelomius, who pressed his hands together thoughtfully.
What our dwindling magical world desperately needs is young, fresh, enthusiastic people who are eager to train and will work hard, said Dr. Thelomius.
Dr. Thelomius didn't seem aware of Seth at all. He was frowning over a large document, gripping a shiny purple pen, and hesitating, glancing towards something to Seth's right.
Everyone knows it, but no one has the courage to it.
Where was that twinkle in his eye? He looked a lot more serious.
I mean to start a recruitment drive.
You don't mean to have an open invitation to join the Elysee?
The voice to Seth's right made him jump. Someone he couldn't even see, but he thought he recognized the voice of Count Marid.
That is exactly it, said Dr. Thelomius. Magical people used to be everywhere. Magical folk are becoming so rare that people are starting to forget we even exist. People don't even believe in magic anymore.
Dr. Thelomius shook his head sadly.
We have to act. If we don't scour the country and find the best and most promising new recruits, where will it end? We need keen and talented novices and fresh blood. We need to root out anyone who has just a sprinkle of real magic and make sure it is nurtured in the right direction.
He looked like he was waiting for a comment, and eventually the other voice replied.
You must just make an enemy of some of the most influential magical families.
Dr. Thelomius gave a hollow chuckle and picked up the pen, but his hand still hesitated over thick sheets of paper.
I know what I'm proposing might upset people, but with the real danger of magic dying out completely, what choice do we have? Someone must have the courage to act. But what I mean to propose, well, at least no one will be able to accuse us and say how we recruit isn't fair.
everyone must be given an equal chance. I don't understand. What exactly do you mean to do?
Dr. Tholomyès got to his feet and started pacing the small office, his hands behind his back, his head jutting forward. Seth stepped back, fearing he'd lose the image if he collided with it.
We need to change the rules of entry for the Elysee. It should be for anyone with a real flair for magic and the dedication to succeed. Those are the ones who should be given a chance, whatever their background. It is too flawed to simply rely on magic being passed to children. Magic is much more complicated than that. Magic is drawn to where it wants to go.
If I have understood correctly, what you are proposing, this is going to be unpopular?
I propose a procedure where we are all given a chance to demonstrate suitability to join the magical world. Everyone will be judged by the same rules, and everyone will be asked to undergo it. Only those who pass will be invited to be officially part of our magical community. It'll be called the Prospect.
There was a short silence.
You mean to make everyone go through this prospect? Even those who feel a place is rightfully theirs? Even those who have been long-standing members of the magical community? The voice said quietly. You'll have such opposition that could even be dangerous. Luckily, saving the magical world is more important to me than being popular.
Dr. Tholomyès stopped and looked towards the voice who had given the warning. He thumped his hand down on the pile of paper. Golden sparks showered from his hands, and he brushed away black speckles of ashes from the top sheet.
We must stop the Elysee being a private club for magical families. Magic is dying. There is no other way. It's the prospect, or it's the end of magic.
He slammed his fist on the desk again.
It is the bravest policy I have heard of in a generation.
Dr. Tholomyès gave a grim smile, returned to his seat, picked up the pen, and signed his name with a flourish.
Thank you, I think. I'm sure everyone will come around to seeing that it's for the best. I feel sure everything will be absolutely fine.
The image faded. Seth slid the stone into one of his pockets, and it took a moment to take in the familiar trees, and Angelique standing there waiting.
Dr. Tholomyès made things tough for himself, didn't he? Is that why people like Red Valerian are against him? It isn't even so much that he started this apprentice scheme looking for new recruits. It's more that he's making old magical families prove their worth.
Angelique looked at him for such a long time, it made him feel uncomfortable.
Our Sorcerer General was a brave man.
He didn't realize just how angry some magical folk would be, did he?
Angelique turned and headed back towards the hotel, and Seth followed, feeling even sadder than ever that Dr. Tholomyès, with all his brave and fair policies, had died. They walked in silence. Then Seth spotted some green leaves, tiny, with distinctive serrated edges. It was a herb he had been looking out for, and was exactly what he needed. He dived off the path and knelt to pick some. He took out one of the leather pouches he carried everywhere in his pockets to place the leaves inside.
"Do you do this a lot?"
Yes, replied Seth, feeling Angelique's steady gaze.
Haven't seen these for a while, and I use them to make a special tea for Omri. Helps with his indigestion. Did you find what you were looking for, with your divinoscope?
When you say you can find anything growing in the garden, could you find wolfbane?
Seth thought back to the many herbs his father had taught him about.
That's not a medicinal herb. Isn't that rather dangerous?
Once again, all his senses seemed to be reminding him not to trust Angelique. She had still completely avoided telling him what she was up to with that cane of hers. She had told him it followed ripples of even very stale magic.
But how was he supposed to even know what she meant?
Only in the wrong hands, Seth.
So, could you get some?
Probably.
And what about figwort?
If I wanted to,
although you shouldn't really...
And squill?
Not too much, just a pinch.
How long would it take to get all those together?
I couldn't say exactly. What do you want them for?
Her dark eyes avoided meeting his.
Can I keep the book?
He asked. Angelique hesitated.
Oh, I suppose so. Only it's on my library card, so don't get it back late or lose it. Don't damage it. Don't do anything to it. Okay? But I can read it. And if I get you those herbs, will you tell me what you're doing with your divinoscope? As long as you're not planning to use those herbs for anything bad.
Bad? Seth? Me? She wrinkled her nose.
What on earth do you mean?
Then Angelique took a quick glance around her. They were almost back at the hotel.
Seth, I need to talk to you. You remember me saying you might be the only person who can help me?
Because I've lived here so long. She nodded.
I'm sure you have all the answers.
She gave him such a long and penetrating look with those intelligent brown eyes of hers. For an uncomfortable moment, he felt as if she knew all about the Black Book.
I really know nothing.
Well, if you promise not to tell anyone what I am about to tell you, and I mean no one, it's crucial, then I will tell you what I've been doing, or trying to do, because there is so much here I don't understand. And you can help me, Seth. In fact, you must.
Okay, okay, I get it. You can trust me, Angelique.
He wished he could trust her. I've been taking readings about magic. Seth could only look at her blankly.
Specifically, whether magic has been used recently. It leaves a mark in the air. To most people, it would be completely invisible. But there are ripples.
Angelique moved the dramatic stripe of red in her dark hair to behind her ear.
Seth, the first time we spoke you said you'd never heard of magic.
I know.
But Seth...
Angelique took another reading from the end of her cane and looked about her.
There is magic everywhere here.
Seth stopped completely and could only look at her wide-eyed.
But there are magical people here. They are here for the prospect.
That's not what I mean. That does not fit with what my readings are telling me.
Well, that's what your divinoscope is telling you. Well, it must be faulty.
Angelique drew herself up, insulted.
Faulty? It is not faulty. You have to help me, Seth, because something is not right. The magic here. It's not stale magic. It's magic I don't really...
Angelique chewed her lip and carried on. She was talking mostly to herself.
It's distorted magic. That's the only way I can describe it. It's like at this hotel, someone is using a form of magic I've never come across before.
Chapter 27. Some news on our candidates.
Some sort of magic? Here?
Seth felt his heart skip faster.
How could she possibly be right?
He had no chance to collect his thoughts or ask anything more. As he caught the smell of fresh coffee arriving on the morning breeze, just ahead of Inspector Pewter, looking as fresh and smart as if he'd arrived straight from having his suit pressed and his hair tidied. He was carrying a tray loaded with cups.
I bring coffee and bad news, called Pewter, putting the tray on one of the long tables on the patio outside the hotel lounge.
Oh, no,
said Angelique, covering her mouth with her hand, her eyes widening.
Someone else hasn't...
I'm sorry to say, I appear to have eaten all the shortbread last night. Now, there is nothing like a bright and breezy morning to make you want to get started on work right away, and a biscuit always helps. At least, it would do.
I'll go and make some more.
Seth went to slip past him, feeling his stomach twist as he realized just how behind he must already be with his many kitchen tasks.
Pewter lay a steadying hand on his arm. Today, Mr. Seppi, I request that you work with me, even if we will have to bravely survive without biscuits.
Seth had been going to suggest that they all go and sit more comfortably inside, rather than out here on a damp, chilly morning. There was still frost everywhere. The sun had not yet touched, and they only ever used this long table on the patio at the height of summer. But as he took a seat, it was warm. He even felt a soft summer breeze flutter on his cheek, and he looked at Pewter. Was he making it warm here? Was he using magic?
You, Seth, began Pewter, caused me to get almost no sleep. It was the fault of that supremely impressive question that you asked last night.
Sorry about that, sir.
Miss Square!
Angelique had already started to turn back to the garden.
Perhaps just for a moment we can forget that you are a suspect here. I would be supremely grateful.
She flashed him an annoyed look.
Think I can cope with that? You want something from me?
What exactly?
Her dark eyes narrowed.
You said yesterday you had notes on everyone's magical demonstrations. I would be most interested to know exactly what everyone's skill was that they showed at the Prospect Feast.
Pewter poured them each a cup of coffee. He slid one towards Angelique invitingly. She stared at it, hesitating for a couple of moments before taking a seat that was still damp from the morning dew. Seth saw Nightshade return from hunting for her breakfast and slip under the table. She was ready to listen, ready to learn. He was doing the same. Seth searched his mind for anything supremely impressive he had said yesterday, but his mind was too distracted by what Angelique had revealed.
Surely Dr. Thelomius's murderer had to be someone from the magical world, someone who had arrived here as a guest to take part in the prospect. How could there be magic already here at the hotel? But then how often had he thought to himself that the garden was magical? Of course, he'd never actually believed.
The question you asked, Seth, was this crime committed using magic?
Said Pewter, interrupting Seth's thoughts.
It was almost exactly the question I was asking myself, because otherwise it seems an impossible crime, and really there is no such thing.
Angelique sipped her coffee. She gave her head a little thoughtful shake.
But someone getting into that locked room during the only 5 minutes, when it could have been done, that would require seriously impressive magic.
There was the slamming of a door, and Kingfisher stomped out, stroking his moustache, smoothing his green suit and complaining,
"Why is he not under lock and key?"
He glared at Seth and Angelique.
"And why is she drinking coffee?" "I am pleased to say you are not too late for a cup," replied Pewter.
Kingfisher still glared, but he sat down and accepted the coffee.
"Now, we were just agreeing that we are putting aside all our differences, a time for pooling resources. First, I want to go over one or two details.
Kingfisher groaned and put his head in his hands.
Now, Miss Square was sitting right next to the dessert, which had arrived at the very last second.
They all nodded.
After the main course, everyone had the chance to show their magic, said Angelique. I did not move the whole time. I made notes, and I'm sorry, but absolutely no one went past me or near that table. Then it was time for dessert, and...
Who handed Dr. Tholomyès the dessert? Inquired Pewter.
Seth noticed that Angelique's throat quivered slightly as she whispered,
That, I'm afraid, was me.
She shook back her hair and rattled her long red fingernails on the table.
Gregorian, she said clearly. After the food arrived, the dining room was officially sealed, ready for the prospect, and was then left empty for 5 minutes. Can I just check whether we can rule out that's when the poison was administered? Was the dining room door simply locked, or was it charmed for magical intervention? How difficult would it have been to get past?
Of course, it was charmed. Think I'd forget the absolute basics?
Kingfisher's lip curled at Angelique, thinking she had the right to question him.
That room was sealed.
Did the charms you put in place cover the whole room? Pressed Angelique.
Kingfisher hesitated.
All right, no, he snarled. I just made sure someone couldn't use an unlocking fix on the door. Myself and Mr. Bunn had keys to the two locks. We're all going to be back in 5 minutes. It's just part of the procedure. It's to keep any evidence that people might be bringing to the prospect away from the prying eyes of any non-magical people who might be hanging about. Some magical folk are very secretive about their magic, or being magic at all. The charm was definitely still in place when myself and Mr. Bunn opened the door again.
Pewter gave a discreet cough.
I say, let's forget the fact that Tholomyès was a political figure with powerful enemies. Forget it?
Echoed Kingfisher with a hollow laugh.
Well, I try to forget politics as often as I can.
I agree that focusing on how the crime could have been committed is a good place to start, said Angelique.
Well, we know it can only have been done by the kitchen boy.
A rustling behind them, and a familiar, terrifying smell of iron sheets and rum warned Seth that his horrible boss, Norrie Bunn, was approaching, and he was about to pay for a fatal mistake. For the first time in his life, he completely neglected his duties. He tried to scramble out of his chair, but not quickly enough. Norrie held the back of it like a steel trap, but her voice, when she spoke to the guests, was syrupy.
I can only apologise for Seth's manners. He's not well trained, and recent events have upset him. But he should know his place is not to slouch about with the guests.
Seth felt her bony fingers gripping the back of his chair, and she hauled it backwards, nearly sending him flying.
What on earth are you playing at, boy?
Thundered Norrie Bunn, breathing rum fumes right in his face.
Think guests want to sit about with the kitchen boy?
She turned to give a polite, tight smile to the others. Seth again tried to get to his feet, but stumbled awkwardly.
My dear Mrs. Bunn, any chance of some more coffee?
Pewter asked politely, waving the empty coffee pot. Norrie Bunn whipped her head around to look hard at him.
I shall get Seth onto it right away. That, and the fact that we will soon have hungry guests wanting their breakfast, and my kitchen boy hasn't set foot about his duty since yesterday. We are a little behind.
She now had Seth's wrist, gripped so hard he thought his bones would crack.
That does seem very troublesome, Mrs. Bunn,
said Pewter smoothly. I can see why you are so keen to get young Seth back into your, kitchen.
Norrie started to drag Seth away.
I'm impressed by the way you so easily cope with having a notorious poisoner among your kitchen staff.
Mrs. Bunn loosened her grip on Seth, as if he'd set his hand on fire. She looked at him in horror, and turned to Pewter, a look of slow uncertainty crossing her sharp features. Pewter checked the enormous watch on his wrist.
"Are you certain Seth poisoned one of my guests?" Norrie hissed. "I heard that yesterday you were trying to pin it on my daughter."
"Rest assured, investigations are proceeding, but currently we have absolutely no reason to suspect anyone else."
"I really should go and help in the kitchen," said Seth.
Pewter gave his head a very small shake and frowned. He turned to Kingfisher.
"I guess someone could offer some help."
Kingfisher looked aghast, pointing a finger to his chest.
"Me? Well, that's very kind of you to offer, Mrs. Bunn. Mr. Fishfinger will come and assist you. Shall we say 5 minutes?
Seth couldn't believe it when Mrs. Bunn simply scuttled off. He sat down again, although Angelique turned to him with a smile that only made him dread what was coming.
"Seth's been an eager student about the magical world. Now is a good time to show that you've been paying attention."
Seth felt his face go hot as everyone turned to him, waiting.
Seth cleared his throat. "Well, magic is rare. It is difficult to do. It can be dark and dangerous. It's a responsibility, because there are different kinds of magic, and some of them are, horrible. And it can take ages to learn to do even basic stuff. That's probably why there aren't that many magical people about, I guess."
He scratched his head.
"That's pretty good, Seth. Glad to see you really have been paying attention," said Angelique.
Seth turned to Pewter.
"When you said I almost asked the same question as you were asking yourself, you weren't thinking about whether it was committed by magic. I guess what you were already thinking is, who here could have had enough magic to have done it?"
Pewter beamed.
"My thoughts exactly. Which is why I am involving you, Miss Square."
He rubbed his hands.
"We proceed, Miss Square. You took notes, and I remember you saying Dr. Tholomyès came all this way to judge a huddle of not very promising hopefuls. So, some news on our candidates, please. Let's see what we make of them."
Angelique didn't speak straight away. She tapped a smart red pen on the tabletop.
"You think one of them is deceiving us, hiding more magical ability than they want to reveal? You think someone might have tricked their way into this prospect? That someone who secretly has strong magical powers is hiding behind being a novice?"
"I say we run with it as a possibility. You could even call it the perfect crime," said Pewter. "But luckily, I like a challenge."
Chapter 28. Another Way? Angelique took out her red notebook and flipped it open.
Count Mared was pitching a simple well-being potion. A few small glasses of his colourless fluid he calls broom, and you get a warm glow of happiness and start to feel that everyone around you is your friend.
"Sounds fantastic," said Pewter. "That'll be popular. I'd have some of that."
The fact that Count Mared had demonstrated his ability to brew a potion made Seth sit up. That sounded promising.
"Hmm," went on Angelique.
"I would say a hint of magical ability, but it is so incredibly difficult to judge," she sighed. "Dr. Tholomyès was so good at that."
"Professor Pappas spoke. Expert on birds, particularly an ability to talk to them," sneered Kingfisher, swinging on his chair.
I don't think you're going to eliminate suspects that way. Seth, for instance, isn't magic in the slightest.
He gave Seth the most unfriendly smile ever. Seth fidgeted, trying to change the subject.
I think Mr. Bunn used to keep birds. He keeps a tiny bird cage, which is strange when he has a very strict no-pets rule. I helped Professor Pappas' book collect some birdsong this morning. It was fascinating.
Kingfisher gave him a long, searching look, before turning back to Pewter and growling,
I guess Troutbeam was a washout.
But wasn't her grandfather a famous sorcerer? Asked Seth.
Angelique pulled a face.
Miss Troutbeam claims to have invented an anti-gravity dust, but that was always going to be pretty unlikely.
Why's that? Asked Seth.
Anti-gravity dust? That would be Tier 1 wizardry. If Miss Troutbeam had developed that level of magic at her age, it would be incredible.
Magic takes study and hard work to perfect.
You just said you understood that, said Angelique.
You mean even people born into magical families try to trick their way into the Elysee?
Angelique gave a small nod.
I'm afraid magic being inherited from your parents is never guaranteed.
In Miss Troutbeam's case, she's pretty angry at the fact any magic in that family seems to have skipped her completely, drawled Kingfisher.
But how was she making it look like she'd invented an anti-gravity dust? Pressed Seth.
Miss Troutbeam had springs in her shoes. Pretty easy to spot.
Seth remembered those peculiar, thick-soled shoes he'd found when he'd searched Gloria's room. From having a glimmer of hope that they would be able to find the answer, Seth was back to racking his brains again. It was beginning to look like none of the guests had enough magical ability to have done it. How was it done?
Miss Square, you have been most enlightening, said Pewter. Seth, I hope you haven't forgotten that you asked me another extremely good question, and Miss Square, I believe, is about to tell us the answer. Who was this mysterious eighth person at the prospect table last night?
Chapter 29. The Eighth Seat. A noise from the shrubbery distracted them all. Seth could think of one person who was supremely good at creeping around, listening in and looking for a chance to get him into trouble. He looked up and wondered if he should tell them Tiffany could very well be lurking, but after a few seconds, everything went quiet. It was probably just a bird. Angelique pressed on, and her words caught Seth completely by surprise.
The eighth seat at the table was not for a guest. Someone invited us to have our prospect meeting here and be judged on an application to join the Elysee.
It sank in what she was saying.
What? Someone here at the hotel wanted to demonstrate magic. Someone here applied to join the magical world. Who was it?
Demanded Seth.
Horatio Bunn.
Mr. Bunn? Mr. Bunn thinks he is magical.
So that was why Mr. Bunn had been so very excited. He was actually going to the dinner. That was why all the magical folk ended up coming here to the Last Chance Hotel. And that explained why Mr. Bunn had been the first one to call for help when Dr. Thelomius was poisoned. Mr. Bunn had been first on the scene because he had been inside the room all the time. More rustling in the nearby shrubbery made them all turn. This time, it was unmistakable, and Kingfisher went reluctantly to investigate, although he returned quickly, shaking his head. Angelique consulted the notebook again.
I'd like your opinion, Seth, on your master, Mr. Bunn.
Seth could give plenty of opinions about Mr. Bunn,
but he had a feeling she wasn't interested in how mean and lazy he was.
"He had something pretty amazing to show us," said Angelique, shuffling her papers.
Seth was listening in growing disbelief.
Surely Mr. Bunn would simply be another fraudster, hoping he could trick his way into the Elysee, get a library card, and access to all those wonderful magical books and train to be magic. Surely Mr. Bunn had only found a way to do an impressive trick.
"What did he do?" Seth demanded.
"He did magic, with two carved figures of bugs."
"Omries," muttered Seth. "He spends his free time carving those.
What magic did Mr. Bunn do with the carvings?"
"He did something very few people would ever have the skill to do." She twirled the long strand of red in her hair around her index finger. "Something incredible."
Angelique consulted her notes carefully before speaking, and the frown deepened.
"I don't know how he did it. If it was a trick, it was an extremely good one. It certainly looked like proper magic."
"What did he do to Omri's animals?"
He expected her to say he smashed them up or burnt them. He imagined something dramatic to seize the attention.
"If there was anyone in that room who performed magic impressive enough to make me think he could have got past those charms Kingfisher put on the door just before the prospect, it would be your boss."
Seth could bear it no longer.
"What exactly did he do?"
"Personification. He made those little carved figures move. He made them come to life."
Chapter 30. A Grudge Against Wintergreen. Professor Pappusbook emerged from the lounge door, and two steps behind her shuffled the reluctant Gloria, twisting the sleeve of her cardigan.
"Ah, delightful of you to join us, Professor. Can I offer you coffee?"
"How long are you keeping us here?" she demanded.
"Or are you more of a tea drinker?" said Pewter.
And please accept my profuse apologies for the lack of biscuits. I take personal responsibility for that."
He passed her a coffee anyway. Professor Pappusbook puffed up her chest, but accepted the cup.
"You can't keep us here."
"I rather think that as a murder has been committed, we can," muttered Pewter.
Seth was hardly listening.
How on earth had Mr. Bunn done magic?
The professor steamrolled on.
"Are we all under suspicion?"
She didn't wait for an answer.
"Then I hope you have looked seriously at that miniature entertainer who calls himself a magician. When the rest of us went to get changed after that game of cards, he followed Dr. Thelonious straight to his room. I heard them arguing."
"Arguing?"
said Kingfisher uncertainly.
"What about?"
"I'd imagine they had plenty to argue about. He's exactly the sort of chancer out to defraud the magical community that the Elysee doors have been open to, all thanks to Dr. Thelonious and this ridiculous recruitment drive of his."
"You are not a supporter of the changes Dr. Thelonious has been bringing to the Elysee?"
Angelique closed her red notebook with a snap.
"Magic belongs in magical hands," said Pappusbook, puffing herself up, her clothes billowing around her as if she was resettling her feathers. "Littering the magical community with untrained upstarts. Torpor Thelonious had quite different views when he was young. He could not have been closer with Wintergreen Trapbean. Getting up to no end of hijinks, those two. Inventing that famous burglar alarm that inflated people by a few centimetres so that they couldn't escape the way they had come in. So are you investigating that upstart boy properly? He could easily have slipped poison into that glass,
That's exactly the sort of tricks he excels at. Hoping will rule him out because he is young and so very short.
With poison, drawled Kingfisher. Age and size hardly comes into it.
Professor Pappersbook drew herself up to her full height, which made her complicated and colourful hair start to nod.
Are you suggesting my niece?
Seth decided it was a good time to head for the kitchen, and slipped away, hearing Pewter saying something like they must all be hungry, and suggested that they move to the comfortable hotel lounge while they awaited the call for breakfast. Was Mr. Bunn out to defraud the Elise into awarding him a place? Or could he really do magic? There was only one way to find out more. He had to find Mr. Bunn and not let him out of his sight. He simply had to rediscover what his boss was up to. Breakfast could not have been further from Seth's mind, so he sneaked up to the door to the kitchen and listened.
"It's only scrambling eggs, sweet pea," Norrie was saying. "You can scramble an egg." "Why can't Dad and Henri help?" Tiffany moaned. "The question is, where is that boy? Only thinking of himself. Where has he got to? Under arrest for murder. If you ask me, it's just an excuse to get him out of doing his jobs."
There was a smell of burning.
"Even Seth could manage to scramble an egg, sweet pea."
Norrie sounded cross.
"Just what exactly are you learning at that expensive school of yours?"
Seth fled, before Norrie Bunn could discover him lurking in the doorway and put him to work. So Mr. Bunn wasn't in the kitchen. Then where was he? What was Mr. Bunn up to? Seth darted a quick look in the lounge, where the guests were assembling. He could hear them all trying hard to be polite to each other, but no Mr. Bunn. He made a quiet dash to his attic room. Nightshade was stretched out full length on the bed, like a puddle of darkness, catching up with some snooze time. Angelique had told him that there was magic here at the hotel, some sort of distorted magic. How had Mr. Bunn managed to do magic? Seth sank onto the end of the bed, wondering and earning a sharp, reproving claw in the leg.
"I'm not asleep. I'm on the case," Nightshade muttered drowsily.
Seth stroked her soft fur. He thought of Angelique jetting everything with a fierce blue light. He thought how the walls of the hotel had seemed to respond with a threatening rumble.
"Just leave the breakfast in the bowl as usual," muttered Nightshade.
Seth slowly reached out, extending his arm towards the longest wall in the room, slowly lengthening his fingers, reaching tentatively towards the rough, cracked plaster of his attic room. Was it possible there could be magic here, actually in the walls? He flexed his fingers nervously, not daring to even brush the wall, as if just touching it might bring that voice again.
"Do stop wriggling," snapped Nightshade, giving him another jab in the leg.
Seth brought his fingers back in sharply.
"You're getting distracted, Seth. Kingfisher still wants to arrest you. He's the one you've got to convince. You've got to get something on one of the others. They all seem to have a reason to want Dr. Tholomyès out of the picture. Which of them is it, Seth?"
He stroked Nightshade.
"What about Mr. Bunn?"
"Old Bunn? I was under the table. I heard all about him doing magic. Is that your best idea?"
"It really sounds like he did magic."
Seth took out his black book and flicked again through the pages. His eyes alighted on the image of what looked like a lantern or tiny birdcage, with beautiful shafts of intense light zinging out of the device. The firefly cage. He had thought it beautiful, but after Angelique telling him he didn't even want to know what it did, the picture now looked strange and frightening. Why was that picture in this book? So how did he do it?